This week's Parsha, Parshas Tetzaveh, continues where last week's Parsha ended off, Parshas Truma, and talks about the building of the Mishkan. In this week's Parsha, there's a focus on the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Before talking about the Kohanim, the Parsha begins with a command that Bnei Yisrael should take very pure oil, beaten from olives, to light the menorah. The Tzenarena begins the Parsha discussing this olive oil before transitioning to talk in depth about the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. The Tzenarena starts with a quote from Rabbeinu Bachai, who quotes from Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei, as has been done in previous Parshios. Shemen uketores yisamach lev, umesek re'ehu me'atas nefesh. Oil and ketores, incense, gladden the heart, and the sweetness of a friend is better than one's own advice. The description of oil in the Pasuk prompts Rabbeinu Bachai to explain the Pasuk and its applicability to our lives based on our Parsha. This Pasuk of Mishlei teaches us that one should use oil and incense to gladden people, meaning one should provide them a living to a stranger or poor person. It should sustain them, as is done with oil, which represents wealth. In addition, the second half of the Pasuk tells us that we need to talk to the poor people with sweet words that gladden the hearts. The Pasuk compares the food that we feed the poor people to oil and ketores, incense, to teach us that we can't just give the poor bread and water, but we should honor them with delicacies, with spices to make them happy, and speak kindly to them as if they're our best friends. We can't treat certain people with respect and patience and then bark at the poor to take food, and our heart really isn't into it. For example, sometimes a mashulach, a collector, might come to our door to collect tzedakah. And we know we're going to give a limited amount because there are many people coming, or maybe we've already donated to other causes. So if this collector is coming to our door to collect for a wedding, we might choose to give them a small amount, but there's no reason that we can't give them a hearty mazel tov at the same time, to give them a sweet word as we help them out. The Medrash gives another explanation of the Pasuk from Mishlei. The Medrash says that the words shemen uketores yisamach lev, wine and ketores gladden the heart, are referring to the oil of the Beis Hamikdash and the ketores in the Beis Hamikdash. We offer them to make Hashem's heart happy. One second. Hashem doesn't need our gifts to be happy. What the Tzenarena is alluding to in the next few ideas that he quotes is that the building of the Mishkan corresponds to the creation of the world. There is even a Medrash Tanchuma that's not quoted in the Tzenarena that says that when the Mishkan was built, the whole universe gained a foundation. Tzenarena is going to compare the creation of the world to the fact of when we bring the offerings of oil in the Mishkan. So what are these parallels? The Tzenarena explains that just like Hashem was happy when he created the world and he saw that everything he created was in good order, Hashem is also happy when we bring oil to the Torah. By the creation of the world, the Pasuk says that Hashem saw that it was tov ma'od, very good. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Yismach Hashem b'masav, that Hashem was very happy with his creation. So too, Hashem accepts joy every time we light the menorah or we place oil on the offerings that are brought with the karbanos. Another parallel is that just like Hashem purposely created man after he created all the other creatures because man is the most important part of all creation, similarly, after the construction of the Mishkan, Hashem commanded the Kohen to light candles in the Mishkan and burn ketores, which is the most important part of the creation of the Mishkan. The Tzenarena continues talking about the oil. Atat Tzedeh, you Moshe, command Aaron to light the flames. He shouldn't use nut oil or a vegetable oil, but only use an olive oil. And only the first oil, the purest oil that was squeezed from the olive, is kosher to light the menorah. The rest of the olive oil from the olive is kosher for the rest of the offerings for the karbanos, but not for using in the menorah. The Tzenarena then asks a question about the entirety of the Parsha. The Baal HaTurim writes, why doesn't Parsha Tetzaveh have Moshe's name in it, especially since there are mitzvos being commanded in this Parsha? Hashem is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. There is no Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Leimar. And Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, as we would expect when it comes to mentioning mitzvos in the Parsha. In next week's Parsha, which chronologically comes before Moshe built the Mishkan, the Jewish people worship the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav. Hashem wants to destroy them, but Moshe davens and says, if you want to kill Klal Yisrael, Machenina Misifrcha, erase me from your books which you wrote. The curse of a tzaddik, even if it's said conditionally, even if he doesn't really mean it, is fulfilled. And so, in this week's Parsha, Hashem did indeed erase Moshe Rabbeinu's name from one of his books, and Moshe's name is not included in the Parsha. The Tzvor HaMorah writes that Bnei Yisrael is similar to olive oil. How so? The Torah they study illuminates them like olive oil. And this is why the Pasuk says, Vayichu Elecha, take it for you, to you, that you should take it to intentionally. If you uphold the Torah mitzvahs properly in this world, and like you need to, it will remain for you in this world and the next world. And when we do mitzvahs, no one in the world can take it from you. Vayikhoi lecha, take it for you, because nobody else can take it from you once you already do it. And also, because of this, it's written, elecha, to you, make yourself a light. Because Hashem doesn't need a candle. Hashem doesn't need the light. Hashem has enough light up in Shemayim. So why does Hashem need the menorah and the oil that we're taking, that Pasuk says we're taking for ourselves? The Tzenarana brings a mashal. There was once a person who was leading a blind man on the way. And so this person said to the blind man, please light a candle for me. And the blind man said, why am I lighting a candle for you? You're the one who's leading me. You're showing me the right way to go. Why should I use a candle that light a candle that I'm not even going to be using? The man said, yes, I'm leading you in the dark and you can't see, but I want you to light the candle so that our relationship is reciprocal. It's a give and take. It's a better relationship then. What is the nimshal? Klai Yisrael are similar to this blind man who walk in the darkness, and Hashem illuminates for us the path. And even so, Hashem says to Klai Yisrael, light a candle for me. And through this, the fact that you're doing a mitzvah for me, you will merit many brachos and yeshuos, blessings and salvations, since you are doing the will of Hashem. The next part of the parsha discusses the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Special clothes were needed for the Kohen Gadol because the Kohen Gadol had a different status than all other human beings. The Kohen Gadol is compared to a malach, an angel by the Tzenarana, so he needs different clothes that differentiate what his status is. He is elevated from the nation and he does service in the Beis HaMikdash and in the Mishkan. And just as an angel is pure, so too should the Kohen Gadol be pure while the Avodah is done. The Tzenarana quotes the Gemara that says that just as karbanos atone for the averos that Bnei Yisrael do, similarly, the garments worn by the Kohen Gadol also atone for the averos that Bnei Yisrael do. That is, of course, that if Bnei Yisrael do tshuva, then the clothing of the Kohen Gadol serves as an atonement. It serves as a way that Hashem channels forgiveness to this world. So how so? What are the different clothing that the Kohen Gadol wears, and how does it atone for different sins? So first, there's the choshen mishpat. The breastplate and mishpat is justice, and it rests opposite the heart. And this atones for sins committed with corrupt judgment, and these judgments flow from the heart. So the choshen is placed near the heart. The second garment listed, the ephod, is an apron, and it atones for those who served idolatry. The me'il, which is worn above all the clothes and has on the bottom rimonim and pomonim, bells and pomegranates, this atones for lashon hara. The Oz V'Hadar edition of Rabbeinu Bechai explains that the me'il and its bells on the bottom make a sound. Whenever the Kohen Gadol walks, people hear him from the me'il. This garment atoned for the sins done with sound, specifically lashon hara. The ketones, the shirt, atones for murders, and the Oz V'Hadar mentions how the ketones pasim of Yosef was dipped into blood, and so there's a parallel where they told Yaakov that Yosef had been murdered, and so here the ketones atones for murders. The hat, which is called the mitznefes, which the Kohen Gadol wore, was very tall, and it raised him above others. So this hat atones for the sin of pride, where one considers themselves above other people. The hat is placed on the head, and this would hint to arrogance. Next is the avnet, the belt. It goes around the waist, and so it atones for evil thoughts that are coming from the heart. The tzitz is a gold sash that was worn on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, and it atones for cruelty, for azus, for being harsh. The pants, which are worn under all the other clothes, atone for sins regarding immorality and immoral relations. Rabbeinu Bechaye counts what is mentioned, and he says, why are there only 6 clothes mentioned? And in fact, there are really 8 clothes. Why doesn't it mention the tzitz and the pants when it is discussing the clothes of the Kohen Gadol in the Parsha? And the reason he gives is that it only mentions here clothes that Moshe wore. Pants were only worn by the high priest, by the Kohen Gadol, so it doesn't include them here. And also the tzitz, which is worn on the forehead, wasn't really a piece of clothing. It was more of a vessel. It was for the sake of beauty. It was jewelry. But it's not really clothes, so it wasn't mentioned in this list in the Parsha. The Tzenarana then goes into great detail about one particular kind of garment that the Kohen Gadol wears, and that is the ephod, the apron, that was attached to the choshen, the breastplate. So the Choshen has on it 12 very precious stones, the most precious stones in the world, and they were arranged in 4 rows with 3 columns in each row. Engraved on each of the stones was the name of a shevet, a tribe. And how did they get this name engraved on there? They took a shamir, they took a special worm, and they placed it on the stones. This worm would engrave the names of the shvatim on the stones. The ephod went around the waist of the Kohen Gadol. The length went from under the armpits all the way down to the ankles, and there were 2 straps that held it up on the shoulders that were attached with 2 precious stones, one on each shoulder that was inlaid in gold. And engraved on each of these 2 stones that were on the shoulders were the names of 6 of the shvatim. So on each of the stones on the Choshen, it had engraved one name of one shevet, and also the names of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. On each of the stone, it came out that they had 6 letters on each stone, so that all the stones together would have 72 letters. As we said before, there are parallels between the creation of the world and the Mishkan, and that parallel is coming up again here. These 72 letters correspond to the hours that were in the 6 days of the week, excluding the nights, to show that the world was created in 6 days. And the world's existence is thanks to the Shvatim. So there's a connection between the fact that the Shvatim are on the Choshen, and that is reminding us that the world's creation was dependent on those Shvatim that are listed. And the world was only created during the daytime, so that's why that's only the 72 hours of creation. The names written on the Choshen, the Shvatim and Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, are called the Urim V'Tumim. If a person had a question, they would stand before the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol would look at the Choshen, where the letters were lit up, and then the Kohen Gadol would put together the words and would understand what was being said to him. The Kohen Gadol would not answer every single person who would ask, but rather he would only answer a question that was asked by the king or by a representative of the community, something that was very important that the community needed to know. But the individuals did not ask the Kohen Gadol to interpret from the Urim V'Tumim in this way. The Tzena Arena then goes on to quote Rabbeinu Bachai, who writes about each of the stones on the Choshen and why that shevet that was engraved on that particular stone represented the meaning of that stone, and then what special properties existed in the stone that was on the Choshen. So one stone was called Odim. It's red, and it had Reuven's name engraved on it. Why did Reuven get the red stone? Reuven was ashamed in front of his brothers. His face turned red. Why was he ashamed? When Rachel had died, Reuven wanted his father's bed to be with his mother, Leah. So he moved his father's bed, which was highly inappropriate. And because of this sin, his face was red with shame. This stone has a special skula, a property, which is that a pregnant woman who carries the stone will not miscarry. And this also points to Reuven, who brought the dudaim from the field, who brought these flowers from the field which Leah gave to Rachel, through which a woman could conceive and give birth. So it all relates to fertility. The second stone had Shimon's name engraved on it. The pitta, which is a bit green and yellow, is because the shevet had sinned, and they became green and yellow from the Avera when the prince of Shimon sinned publicly with Kuzbi, the Midiani princess. So why was this put on the Choshen? To show if they continued to sin with their morality, the Choshen wouldn't be able to maintain this holy stone and would crack. The skula of this stone is that it cools the body, so it won't be so passionate for aveiros. When the body is heated, the body becomes passionate and a person will pursue immorality. So this stone cools lust. The third stone, Levi's name, was engraved on a stone called the Berekes, and it shines like a candle. This is the stone that Noach took with him into the Teva, and it lit up the Teva for him and his family. Why does Levi get a stone that shines? Levi was a Talmud Chacham, a scholar, and he enlightened the eyes of all of Klal Yisrael, of all the Jewish people, with his teachings. So his name is engraved on a stone that illuminates the world. This stone has a skula related to Levi, who would teach the Jewish people that it makes people wise. In the next row, Yehuda's name was engraved on a stone called Nofech, which is green. And this is because Yehuda's face was green. He was ashamed because he slept with his daughter-in-law, Tamar. The skula of this stone is that whoever carries it and goes to war, his enemies will be defeated before him. And so Yehuda was the leader in war, specifically in the days of King David. David HaMelech went where he went, and he fought battles against all the other nations and conquered them. The fifth stone, the middle stone in the second row, has the name of Yisachar engraved on it, and the stone is called a sapir. And you might be familiar with the word sapir, that stones that Moshe Rabbeinu chiseled to make the luchos are described. This is appropriate because Yisachar learned a lot of Torah, and he learned the Torah that Moshe had, the Aseres HaDibros that Moshe wrote on the luchos that were made out of this material. The sapphire stone is also mounted under the Kiseh HaKavod. So the lesson here is that one who learns Torah, after his death, he merits to go before Hashem and the Kiseh HaKavod. Zvulun's name was in the sixth stone, the last stone in the second row, and it's called the Yahalom. This stone shows wealth. It's a skula that anyone who carries it will have lots of mazel, which is what happened to Zvulun. He became very wealthy. He supported Yisachar, who learned Torah. The skula of this stone also relates to Zvulun. It brings sleep to those who need it. This is what Leah said when she was naming Zvulun. Hapam Yizbalini. Now my husband will lie next to me. He's going to sleep next to me. And so this is a skula for bringing sleep. In the third row, first column, the tribe of Dan was engraved on the stone whose name was Leshem. And it has in it the form of the man to show that the tribe of Dan turns away from Hashem and served the Avodah Zarah. Next, Naphtali's name was engraved on a stone called a shvo, and the skula for it is that one who rides on a horse does not fall off the horse. It's as if he's stuck to the horse. And that's because the word Naphtali means stuck, and so that's why Naphtali's name is engraved on a stone whose skula is that a person would not fall off a horse. Gad's name was engraved on the stone called Achlama, and this stone is a type of crystal, and it's found in the world, and everyone recognizes stones like this. Just like they would recognize the tribe of Gad because there were so many of them, and there were so many casualties that were killed because of Gad that everybody around the world, everybody who ever came up against him, knew him immediately, because when he would strike at the soldiers in the army, they would all fall at his heels. This stone has a skula that it strengthens the heart and takes away a person's fear. And so the tribe of Gad were not afraid when they were the ones who led in the war. We're now up to the last row. The name of Asher was engraved on the stone whose name was Tarshish. And this refers to a land in this Shevet's territory that had fruits that were easy to digest. Our last two Shvatim, Yosef's name was engraved on a stone called Shoham. And it has a skula to give chen, to give grace to the one who carries it. And he'll find grace in the eyes of all who see him. And Yosef had this power. He was regarded as chen, and he found grace in the eyes of people. And his words were listened to. He had a charisma. People were attracted to listen to what he said. Binyamin's name was engraved on the last stone called the Yashva. And this stone has three colors, red, black, and green. And its skula is it stops the blood of a person if they're bleeding. And therefore, Binyamin had the strength to stop himself when he knew who sold Yosef, but he never said anything to Yaakov Avinu. And therefore, he has this stone that could be a combination of the words Yesh Peh. He has a mouth. Binyamin had a mouth, but he didn't say anything. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes that these stones had to be kept very clean, because if they were not clean, they would lose their properties, their segula. In this week's parasha, we really talked about two topics in the construction of the Mishkan. First, we talked about the meaning behind oil in the Mishkan in the service of Hashem. It was given to us to share, and it also makes Hashem happy as he is giving us opportunities to do mitzvos and to serve him. And this parallels how Hashem created the world as a place where we would have opportunities to perfect it, and Hashem gives it to us, the man, as we are the purpose of creation, just like the oil, the service of the oil in the Ketores, were the purpose of the Mishkan. The next thing we discussed in the parasha was about the clothes of the Malach in our midst, the Kohen Gadol, who is meant to represent an elevated level of spirituality, an elevated connection to Hashem. Each part of his clothes atones for something that one of the Jewish people should do. Just like Karbanos could atone for Klal Yisrael, if a person did tshuva, the clothes of the Kohen could also atone for the Jewish people. Finally, in the discussion of the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, we looked at each of the stones of the Choshen, why it was chosen, and if it has a segula, a special property that will benefit people. I think that the lesson that we can learn from this parsha is that this physical world, the oil, the stones, is a manifestation of the powers of the spiritual. The Mishkan was the connection between heaven and earth. It is where the physicality and spirituality combined. Today, we're missing the keys to the universe, the keys to combining the spiritual and the physical, because there's no Mishkan. But we can yearn for the day when it will be built and we can focus on how do we bring our physical world, even without the Mishkan, up to a level to be raised in spirituality. Have a good Shabbos.